accounting for the
recording in progress
that I received through this program. So we know that we have received reports that indicated challenges in some of the departments, in some of the municipalities that are receiving this grant. So today, the report that we will be getting will be talking to some of the issues that I've mentioned and more on what the department is going to be reporting to us. With those few words, honorable members, and those that are from the executive, the acting DG, as we had when we asked that what is happening to DG Advocate Sam Vukela, the minister said that she is going to brief us. But we had on the same week on the news that he is taking early retirement through an agreement that has been reached. So we would like to know, DM, Ms. Kivit, that who is now our acting DG, in that the DG now has taken. Maybe it's his last day today, we don't know, but we hope that at least as this portfolio committee, we will know who is then going to act. We knew previously, we were informed that we have an acting DG, but the DG came back. So we don't know. We know we are taken through the media, of course, but we would like to know about who is going to act now. So it's something that, as the portfolio committee, we deserve to know. As much as the agenda has not yet been flighted, I may touch on the apologies. We have a standing apology from Ms. Martinez, who is our committee secretary, as she is part of the support for the actual committee for floods that affect Eastern Cape and KZN. So she is part of that, and as such, today they are meeting with the general. We also received a apology from the minister indicating that she will also not be part of this meeting today. We also have an apology from, we have an apology from Honorable Njobo, who is on the flight right now as we speak to Cape Town. Once she lands in Cape Town, she will join the meeting. And she indicated that that will be around 10:30. So we only have those apologies. Any other apologies? Can you please write them the agenda, please? Another apology, honorable members, do we have any other apologies other than the ones that I've mentioned?
Chair, yes. I sent through the WhatsApp. I have forgotten that to forward yesterday. I have some submissions to make. I'm writing an exam. So if I can be excused at 10:30, I'm left behind.
Okay, thank you. We always appreciate that our honorable members will try to improve their education by studying. We appreciate what you are doing, Honorable Shabalala. We will then allow you to leave the meeting at 10:30. Can you please fly to the agenda?
Unfortunately, Chair, I do not have a copy of the agenda, but what I can do is make Sitabisa is the co-host, so she's able to fly to, then she can do so.
Okay, no problem. We will then invite the department through DM to present. DM, over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Good morning to you and the honorable members of the committee, to the support team of Parliament, together with the support team from the department, and in this case they are led by the responsible DDG CJ Abrams, who will be leading the presentation. But understanding, Chair, from your comments that we are ending the Women's Month, but also tomorrow we will be...
Honorable
Shabalala, please mute.
Honorable
Shabalala.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. And being spring day tomorrow, as I think in Cape Town, it's starting today. The weather is quite beautiful outside. But Chair, allow me to first appreciate the fact that the committee has seen it fit to call us to account, especially on the question of data use management by the responsible directorate, which is the EPWP program, because with data, the decision making becomes faster. It also becomes reliable, as well as it builds confidence, because it's a good base on which you strategize. And therefore, I do want to appreciate upfront this opportunity that is given to the department and afforded to the people of South Africa to understand deeper through our report on our data management on EPWP, the workings of that division or directorate, as well as the strategy moving forward, the kind of responses that we are making, informed by the data, of course, understanding also that in as much as in that report, you will see that we are doing quite well in the social sector, where areas of home-based care, early childhood development, those issues or those areas that feed into social cohesion. And therefore, this program is not just a poverty relief program, but it also contributes to the development of the people of the country in a manner that builds and strengthens families, and therefore contributes a great deal to building our communities. That being said, Honorable Chair, without me going too far, let me allow DDG CJ Abrams, who will be leading the presentation. But once more, let me appreciate the approach of the department, of the portfolio committee. Thank you, Chair. Over to you, CJ, through your chairperson.
Good morning. Good morning, Deputy Minister, and good morning, Chair. Let me just speak on my camera. Thank you and good morning to all the members and all the support in relation to the Portfolio Committee and then the EPWP staff members that have joined us here today. In terms of the presentation, we would be looking through the Department of Public Works coordination role. the role that is required by other departments, looking at the funding provided to other public bodies as per the allocation processes within our country, the EPWP reporting system, measures to undertaken to obtain a clean audit, and also how audits will be managed and handled with regard to other public bodies. In terms of the brief that we have received, we were requested to brief the Portfolio Committee on progress in terms of improving the management of employment data. And so therefore, we would be looking at those processes, particularly focusing on what we have done in this last period to obtain and progressively move to a clean audit. And look at some of our ICT and some innovation strategies that are being undertaken by us as the coordinating department. And then also then looking at the reporting components of departments and provinces and municipalities so that there can be some form of standardization and with the aim of strengthening compliance. And for us, it was critical to look then at the role of DPWI. And that will be an intensive component of this presentation, particularly from a budget and an accountability perspective. We have taken a step back to be able to then articulate the role of public works, which is then as per the EPWP mandate and as per endorsed by Cabinet. And as per on our website, which is then put out in the EPWP business plan, which governs the EPWP phase four, the role of public works. And the role of public works is to provide a coordinating, a supportive environment, enabling environment for the implementation, provide guidance and support to public bodies that are required to implement the EPWP. We are also the transfer officer for the EPWP incentive grant. In terms of our vote, we receive 1.6 billion. We also then are responsible for putting out various policies for the management of training and enterprise development, relying then on public bodies also to be able to fund that aspect. We then provide a monitoring and evaluation reporting support. We've got a help desk, for example. We have to maintain the EPWP reporting system. And so we've developed what we then have as a web-based system, which is the EPWP reporting system. And we also provide and put out then our annexures, which we then have on our DPWI EPWP website, which puts out the performance of the program as far back as 2004 on a quarterly basis. In terms of the data that is reported by public bodies into the EPWP reporting system. We also provide training to officials implementing the EPWP. And last week, we managed to train a further EPWP officials or people undertaking EPWP projects. They're not EPWP officials. They are officials implementing various EPWP projects across all spheres. And we managed to roll out then again our learning program. And also we roll out extensive training to public bodies to ensure that they know how to report utilizing the EPWP reporting system. We also undertake data validation and cleaning of the data that is reported by public bodies. In terms of public works as a transferring officer, to note that we do get audited in relation to our role as a transferring officer, and we do receive clean audit in relation to the transfer of this funds. In terms of 22-23, we have 1.6 billion as mentioned, and the breakdown is provided as per the grants, which is the integrated grant for municipalities, the integrated grant for provinces, and the EPWP social sector incentive grant for provinces. It's important to note that that expenditure equals about 8% of all expenditure on the EPWP. And the subsequent slides will then advise on where other allocations are in relation to other organizations' votes for the EPWP. DPWI also receives the allocation for the NPO program. This is earmarked funding specific for the IDT and specific for the rollout of the NPO program, for which the IDT will be accountable in relation to the program implementation. In terms of the EPWP design, it recognizes that public bodies have to use their equitable share and their conditional grants to implement the EPWP, mainly recognizing the principle of leveraging EPWP funds. And in total, there are about 358 public bodies that are all assigned EPWP work opportunity targets. The process of assigning is an engagement undertaken with the public bodies, considering the budgets of the various public bodies for various types of services that government does provide, goods and services, and then basing on previous performance also, having a look at putting out certain targets for public bodies. And the table provides us then with an indication of the targets that you then have. So in the Eastern Cape, there are 39 municipalities. Each of them then have specific targets, either in the infrastructure, social, or environment sector. And the same then with the Free State, GP, all the provinces. And so all public bodies are expected to participate in the EPWP. In total, there are 87 provincial departments that have a target and 19 national departments. This information is all disaggregated and disaggregated per sector, per year, and then per public body. In terms of this, as mentioned, this is just a summary table. Now, a critical component that happened in 2021 was we met with the Auditor General in May. And in May, we met with the Auditor General and the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation to look at how we could move to a clean audit. And that clear engagement with our executive authority, not with our accounting authority, was the direction that we got and the advice we received was that our MTSF needs to reflect that the various spheres of government are responsible for the EPWP. Prior to the revised medium-term strategic framework, it was only public works that was then articulated in the MTSF. And therefore, the revision allowed for public bodies to account because DPME advised that if the budgets are allocated to these public bodies need to be held accountable in accordance with the flow of funds. Now, in terms of the implementing bodies, the responsibility, and those are the 358 organizations mentioned in the table above listed, they are responsible to use their own funds, which is the equitable share and conditional grants, which is inclusive of the incentive grants for the implementation of the projects. As mentioned, the EPWP incentive grant as a whole is only 8% of the EPWP expenditure, and therefore much of the leveraging would be required on other funds, such as MIG, for example. Public bodies need to design and implement EPWP programs in line with the EPWP theory of change. They need to report accurate data, and this is a requirement as per the ministerial determination for EPWP. They have to report accurate data on our EPWP reporting system. They need to also then retain the data, and that is the Section 12 of the ministerial determination that says all data must be retained by the organization implementing the project. They need to monitor the quality of the program in terms of the assets and the service delivered. They also need to be able to ensure that obviously data management principles are adhered to. and the data collected on the EPWP reporting system is then that DPWI utilizes for putting out the quarterly performance data. For us, it was then critical, and I think throughout the years, we've never gone to unpack what are the sources of funding in EPWP. As mentioned, it is a funding that public bodies have to be able to leverage. Now, in terms of the Division of Revenue Act, you then have the MIG, and the MIG has then 17.6 billion. In the terms of the targets that have been assigned to public bodies, it is assumed that 30% of the MIG would be utilized for the creation of EPWP work opportunities. In the Division of Revenue Act, there are specific conditionalities, particularly related to the EPWP, that would then advise on how that would then happen. In terms of the Community Work Program, it is an EPWP program. It is in the non-state sector, and the allocation is 4.4 billion in 23-24. And the target then in the business plan of the EPWP is 252,000 work opportunities. Vote 32 from the Department of Forestry, Fishery and Environment is for environmental programs, and an annual allocation is also made. 3.9 billion is then allocated for 23-24. And the focus there is to look at infrastructure related projects that contribute to environmental protection, conservation, sustainability, whilst also creating work opportunities. And other programs relate to water resource management, biological diversity, and the functioning of natural systems. There are other smaller grants in terms of the mineral resources and energy vote, for which there are also conditions in the Division of Revenue Act. Similarly, for the urban integrated urban development grant that is given to COPTA, there's also conditionalities for the EPWP there. Then vote 38, Department of Tourism under the Destination Development Branch. There would also be an allocation for the EPWP, and also the Department of Social Development under the Special Projects and Innovation Branch. Then a large part of the EPWP work opportunities has funding through the Provincial Maintenance Grant. And that is then put on the vote of the Department of Transport, and it's about 13 billion for 23-24. And yearly, it is assumed that 25% of the provincial roads maintenance grant is used to create EPWP opportunities. The assumptions then look at what is feasible in relation to the types of projects undertaken. And therefore, we know that the grant is meant to undertake other aspects, but the part that is suitable for EPWP work would therefore then be the 25% assumption. And then other public bodies are all required to use their equitable share. In terms of the EPWP reporting system, it is a web-based system, and it's an online reporting system, and so it is digital. And for DPWI, we only put out information in the annexures that have been validated. And so if the process does not meet the validation requirements, it then remains in the system for the public bodies to correct. And corrected data then will be published in subsequent quarters. As the department, we are always improving on our EPWP reporting system. Now, late last financial year, we've managed to migrate all the public bodies at a national sphere and a provincial sphere to our new EPWP reporting system that has a biometric feature. The biometric feature is based on facial recognition and also a date stamp verification of participants that are on site. This then will assist with the collection of data and will eliminate the need for attendance registers where the biometric system is utilized by the public body. And we then will be piloting this after we've managed to migrate all public bodies. So as mentioned, national departments have been piloted. Provincial departments have been piloted. When we do that in a phased manner, it is in order to ensure that the system can handle the number of users. And so even before we brought any users onto the system, we did stress testing, as is a ICT norm. And we now have to then strengthen our system to ensure that the system doesn't slow down once we bring the municipalities into the system. Then another important component for us is to link the EPWP reporting system to the National Population Register of the Department of Home Affairs, which we have done already, and we have to check participant ID data and associated data. We are also now working with the Department of Employment and Labor on the Work Seeker Database, the ESA system, which is the Employment Services of South Africa system. It is a system in terms of vacancies in the broader economy, and it is a work seeker database. And so therefore it is aimed at ensuring that the opportunities and the job seekers then match. And for us it's critical that we then create the linkage so that particularly with the EPWP exited workers, that their work experience in the EPWP can then be transferred to their profile on ESA. And when work opportunities become available within the broader economy, that EPWP participants can have the opportunity to be able to compete for those particular positions. Another initiative that we are now promoting with the public bodies, and we've got what we call a data quality forum. We will continue to engage with public bodies to adopt what we call a standardized template for attendance registers, payment registers, employment contracts. And through doing that, it will allow a public body to be able to undertake electronic checks in terms of the data that they may choose to load on our EPWP reporting system. In terms of Public Works efforts to undertake a clean audit, and I've gone through some of this already, so we are cognizant of the fact that the department has had adverse findings. And there's been several interventions over the last few years in an attempt to ensure we obtain a clean audit. And so it has been that the reporting of participants tested as valid based on uploaded documentation, okay, was one initiative undertaken. But from an auditing perspective, if one does that, it could lead then to underreporting. So even though the reported and the source of the information is improved, the challenge would be underreporting. And that would also then lead to a finding. DPWI went on an extensive intervention and consulting with public bodies to develop what we call an audit standard operating procedure based on the guidance from the Auditor General. And it therefore then informs public bodies on the important requirements when reporting on the implementation of EPWP and to guide them on how to perform audits or verification of their own data. We also went ahead and we introduced what we call a customized indicator for DPWI provincial coordinating departments, and we developed a practice note. And we ultimately still continue to have the finding. And so as mentioned in 21-22, we thought it best to sit down with the Auditor General and the DPME and really ask the question, how do we address this matter? It was important for us to have both the departments, both organizations engaging so that we could collectively try to understand how to address this matter. And the key component was then a continued inclusion and then obviously the revision of the customized indicator for the period for the DPWI provincial coordinating departments. And then to change the MTSF, the medium-term strategic framework indicator, which was previously said to be number of work opportunities reported, through public other public employment programs to actually change it to the number of validated EPWP work opportunities reported by public bodies into the reporting system. And then indicating that all spheres of government, as what the EPWP has put out since phase two, we've put out targets per public body since phase two, is now then reflective of exactly how the program is functioning. And that will then mean that lead and contributing departments will also be responsible and are required to be able to contribute to that particular target, and has therefore audit implications. And therefore also public works, as per the advice received from the Auditor General. We received a letter from the Auditor General on the 8th of July that clearly indicated that DPWI will have to look at its coordination function and any aspect that they are responsible for in terms of the EPWP and amend its APP. And we've gone ahead and we have done that. We will be engaging with the Auditor General further to ensure that whatever the advice we've received is then fully implemented. But from the department side, we have done as what was put out in that letter of 8th of July. If we proceed. Now, in terms of other public bodies, and this is the last slide, and given the change in the MTSF, is that EPWP projects should be audited by the Auditor General at the reporting public bodies, and the responsible accounting officers should be held accountable for audit findings on non-compliance to the EPWP guidelines. DPME advised that public bodies should include APP indicators for which public bodies have direct responsibility. And DPME further advised that public bodies should be accountable for allocated budgets and resources, and that Chapter 5 of the PFMA provides for the responsibilities of accounting officers. Deputy Minister and Chair and members, thank you very much.
Thank you, CJ. Thank you, Chair. Chair, in your opening remarks, you posed a question on the leadership of the department administratively. I need to confirm that yes, DG Vukela, it's his last day today at work, and from tomorrow he's on retirement. But as to who will act, it's a difficult one for me now. Remember that that is the responsibility of the minister in consultation with the presidency, given that now the issue of the DG has been resolved. And I'm almost certain that one of the reasons why Minister wouldn't be here would be that she is attending to some of those issues. And I'm sure by end of today, we shall know who will be acting. I thought I missed to respond to that earlier, and I felt I wouldn't want to create an impression that we don't want to answer. It's just that the procedures are as such. Thank you, Chair. We will await comments from the members and questions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DM. Honourable members, the presentation has been made to us. I now invite you to comment, ask questions on the presentation made. According to the hands that have been raised, it will be Honourable Higlin,
followed by Honorable Graham Mare, followed by Honorable Trink, followed by Honorable Suisa.
Thank you so much, Chair. I had hoped that Minister Delisle would be in, so I have addressed my thoughts to her. Honourable Kivett, if you will take it on her behalf. I have approached my thinking slightly differently, and if you'll just indulge what I'm going to say. I think the biggest problem that I have with this presentation, although I thank you for it, is that we are approaching it as an exercise in a numbers game, as opposed to, and the title is How to Obtain a Clean Audit, as opposed to how do we change the lives of people who desperately need their lives changed by giving them access to a job. And that is how I have approached my discussions on the EPWP. Since 2019, the DPWI has been saying the same thing, that the EPWP is the saving grace of the jobless in South Africa. But actually it isn't. And I'm asking the minister, in this case, the deputy minister, as the executive authority, to please consider what I'm going to say to you and what I'm going to put on the table. The EPWP in this particular financial year, 2022-23, has a budget of 1.6 billion rand. Its basic premise should be skills transfer and the upliftment of the poorest of the poor, especially the youth, women, and persons with disabilities, as well as the true, meaningful way to create worthwhile job opportunities. EPWP can no longer be a farfy game that we used to play in the townships in the old days. It must be a meaningful way to create sustainable development goals that change people's lives. Sadly, what we see is that the EPWP has merely become a numbers exercise, a way to spend budgets and create work opportunities in terms of meeting targets. Let me elaborate. On slide 6, we are shown that we are shown the EPWP targets that have not been met since 2009. In 2018-2019 financial year, the target of 6 million work opportunities in the infrastructure sector and the non-state community works programs were the highest at 56.5% and 62.1% respectively. Infrastructure reported 1.4 million work opportunities against a target of 2.4 million work opportunities in the five-year target. The non-state sector community works program reported 912,412 work opportunities against a five-year work target of 1.4 million work opportunities. The environment and cultural sector reported 819,497 work opportunities against a five-year target of 1.2 million. The social sector reported 828,277 work opportunities against a five-year target of 1 million work opportunities. Overall, phase three achieved 4.52 million work opportunities against a 6 million work opportunity target. And instead of increasing monitoring and evaluation to elevate the EPWPs to meet the targets, what has DPWI done? They've lowered the targets. They haven't increased monitoring and evaluation to increase the number of meaningful job opportunities that have been created. They've lowered the target to 5 million. So what we're actually doing is playing Fafi. We're playing a numbers game with jobs. We're playing a numbers game with targets instead of increasing the way in which we create meaningful job creation opportunities. It's become a numbers game, not a job creation scheme. And that's what worries me. The DPWI and Minister Dalal, in this case, Deputy Minister Kibit, you are the executive authority within the DPWI. You have it within your power to sit down with the Department of Higher Education and create a platform of certification to develop a program that ensures that the people who enter the EPWP become capacitated, they become empowered appropriately, that they get a platform to develop proper skills for development, for genuine upliftment of the poorest of the poor and the most vulnerable. When I was in my constituency recently, I met with a lot of people who have had job opportunity, work opportunities given to them through the EPWP program. They have moved within the EPWP environment for the last 7 or 8 years, whether it's been working as a potato peeler or a street sweeper or a trench digger. None of them wanted to actually be a potato peeler or a trench digger, but those were the opportunities that were available to them. They went from one potato peeler to an onion peeler to a street sweeper to a trench digger. There was no upskilling. There was no development of their skills in what they really wanted to do. There was no certification at the end of that 6-month period, but it was a job opportunity, a work opportunity. At the end of that 6-month opportunity, they got no piece of paper that said, I am a qualified potato peeler, or I am a qualified onion chopper, or street sweeper. And so they never progressed. What would have been so much better for those people was if there had been an opportunity for them to be upskilled, for them to have been trained in something that would have qualified them, that at the end of that 6-month period, they would have got a certificate that said they had qualified in X program that they had set an exam for that would have enabled them to progress to the next level, which is why I'm saying the DPWI and the Department of Higher Education needs to set a curriculum for people who are part of the EPWP program to be elevated to the next level so that when they get another opportunity within the EPWP, they progress. So that the person who this time is a potato peeler, in 6 months' time, goes on to do a basic course in business skills, so that in 2 years' time, he has the ability to know how to peel potatoes. He then has some kind of job skilling so that he has an idea of business acumen, because maybe he wants to open a restaurant. Maybe he doesn't just want to open peel potatoes and chop onions. Maybe he wants to become a restaurateur and he has some business skills behind him that enables him to go beyond, and he has his entrepreneurial skills uplifted, because that's what we want to do. We want to give him a couple of stepping stones, that this stepping stone leads to that stepping stone, so that ultimately we are only enabling him one step beyond being a beggar. We are not giving him an opportunity to grow his skills in us, to get out of being beggars, to not have to depend on the 350 Rand SRD grant or the EPWP menial job status. And it's within the power of the DPWI to take hands with the Department of Higher Education to upskill him or her to get out of this slump, to create an environment where that person becomes better skilled, has a job transfer opportunity to learn more, to get business skills, to become an entrepreneur, get out of the cycle of poverty. It's within this department's purview. It's within this department's purview to get a policy working group together with the Department of Higher Education and really make meaningful change for sustainable development to get people out of poverty. I just approached the EPWP from a completely different point of view because that's what I think we need. I think South Africa needs solutions that are out of the box. And I really and truly am appealing to you. I'm appealing to the DPWI that what we need is out of the box thinking to change the way we view the EPWP, not from the perspective of we need a clean audit, but we need a way to take people out of poverty with meaningful job creation. And I've used the EPWP because that's the best way the DPWI has to do that. And please, I'm begging you, think about what I've said. Thank you so much. I will leave it there.
Thank you, Honorable Hicklin. Honorable Graham, Mary.
Good morning, everybody. And to CJ, thank you very much for your presentation. It's nice to see that there has been progression made in the department because I know how hard you have been working on trying to get some level of assistance from the other departments that utilize the EPWP system. Because I know that the issue actually isn't within DPWI, but within the bodies that are making use of the program. I just got a couple of questions that I'd like to get clarified, please. So the first one is, in terms of the EPWP reporting system, you did say that there are people using it and it is being verified, but what is the extent of the usage of the system? In other words, has it become mandatory that every single person or every single body that receives a grant or grant funding must make use of the EPWP system? And if not, is there a way that we can enforce that? So that would be, we've spoken in the past about withholding funding, and the problem with that, obviously, is that the beneficiaries are the people that suffer and not the people that are not doing their jobs. So have we found another way to enforce compliance on the part of the body that is responsible for the reporting? And I think the idea around having them carry the responsibility of an Auditor General's outcome as the reporting body is one way of ensuring that that happens, because then obviously it then affects their own outcomes. And while I agree with my colleague on the fact that this should be a more meaningful program, at the end of the day, this department needs to obviously focus on audit outcomes to make sure that, A, we continue to get the funding we need to support our programs so that we can make a meaningful difference. And then what I wanted to find out is, what is the threshold for the admin costs for a body that is implementing an EPWP program? So in other words, must all the funding go to the beneficiaries in terms of the stipend that they receive, or is the body allowed to take a portion of the allocated funding and use that to manage and run and administrate the EPWP programs? On on slide 6, where we speak about the other bodies, I think I will probably be putting in questions around what the funds are specifically used for, so that we have an idea. What I would like to know is whether or not we then, I submit those questions to the ministers of the various departments, or whether or not I submit via DPWI to get an idea of where the funds are being used in each of those departments. Again, on the MEG and on the road projects, 30% on the MEG, 25% on the road projects. What I wanted to know is, the 30% of that fund, is that for the whole project or just for the payment of the participants? Again, the question being whether or not they pay. So if it's a road clearing project and they're using EPWP participants, is the 25% for the beneficiary payments, or is the 25% inclusive of overalls, equipment, mowers, weed eaters, et cetera? Because I think it's important to know whether or not there is a percentage allocation that cannot be exceeded for support of the system versus the payment of the beneficiaries. And an example of that is CWP. CWP is, if it was being properly implemented in municipalities, would be an outstanding program, because the idea behind CWP was that it was a step out of poverty. It was a limited duration project. So people couldn't stay on it for years and years and years, because the idea would be that there would be some element of upliftment or skills transfer or skills training that would emanate from that program. So in our municipality, we had people did welding, people learned how to do community gardens, people learned how to do composting, we set up a basket weaving thing where they were doing arts and crafts and making cushions, et cetera, that they could sell. The idea then being that we give them the skills, we give them the support, and ultimately they step out of CWP and become entrepreneurs or have skills where they can be employed. Now, that whole program was then, there was an implementing agent that was responsible for that, and they obviously got money out of it. Again, one of the things that we were trying to get going, or that I was trying to get going in our municipality, was to utilize something like CWP for barefoot plumbers, so that we could train people to be plumbers, and then the municipality could utilize them for repairs that fell within the yard of somebody, which is not under the auspices of the municipality, but sometimes people are too poor to fix their own plumbing, so the leaks get exacerbated because they can't be repaired. So those are the sort of ideas that we were using CWP for, because it creates an entire sort of ecosystem of work and opportunities. That seems to have stopped. CWP has become a street sweeping, pick up rubbish program. How can we make that return that to what it was originally done? And what was the percentage then in terms of funding of what was used in the skills transfer, et cetera, versus the number of beneficiaries that they could support? Then just in terms of slide 7, the slide mentions the above mentioned verification process, but I didn't see anything that really spoke to what that verification process was. But I do like the idea of the biometric approach, because I think it's quite sort of fail-safe. The only problem is where, for example, I live in a rural municipality, there's not always signal to be uploading information. Your supervisors who would be responsible for making use of the biometrics often don't have money for data. So we would need to get around how that biometric system could work in those rural areas. But I do believe that that's the way to go. I think paper-based is easily forged. The verification is an issue. I know even during lockdown, we had supervisors going to visit people at their houses, getting them to sign, and those people had never shown up for work for a day. So we need to find those sort of fail-safes, but we have to understand that there will be issues in rural areas. And then I really appreciate the standardization concept. I think it's an excellent way of doing it, and it will make your ability to enforce compliance so much easier. So I think there's been a massive progression in my eyes from when we started in 2019 to where we are at now. And hats off to you, CJ, and your team for the work that you have done already. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Graham Murray. Honorable Trink, I've also seen Honorable Marshall and Honorable Van Skalvik. You will follow Honorable Suisa. Honorable Trink.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, the ACDP welcomes the presentation, and the presentation itself, I think, outlines the attempt to get the recipients of the disbursements to our sister departments in terms of EPWP funds to become compliant and hence ensuring that the department does not attain another failed audit, I think, which has been a thorn in the flesh in the department over the last few years. But my just essentially three questions. We also support, I think I support the comments made by my previous colleagues with regards to just the progression from having a EPW job to skills transfer and skills development. And I think that has to be a part of the EPWP program. But maybe just three simple questions. CJ, if you could also just please expand on the criteria that the different departments, sister departments would need to that they would need to adhere to for the new digital reporting system to become viable and effective. So what is that set of criteria that they would need? And then secondly, with our municipalities being in so much trouble, as indicated by the Auditor General, some 40 to 50% of our municipalities, many of them no longer going concerns. Will these municipalities have the capacity to comply with the new system? And if they don't, what other measures besides withholding funds would be put in place to ensure that they become compliant? And then my last question is, you spoke about just moving in a phased position with regards to the reporting system to ensure that it has the capacity to contain, the capacity to produce, so that there's no kind of overloading of the system. I know that within your financial sectors, my son works in the IT sector for one of the big banks, and they have kind of parallel systems. And I don't know whether there is the finance for that, so that if you have one system that crashes, you quickly then revert to the second system. So you're doing it in a phased approach so that you don't have a crash and the system doesn't become overloaded. But is there kind of a backup that you have should the system become overloaded and crash? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Tring, Honorable Suwisa. Thank you, Chair. Good morning to everyone. Chair, I'm going to go straight. It's very worrying when you look at the presentation and then you look at the splendid job that is done by the researchers of that we are working with in the committee. And you find so much information from them, which you are expecting that the department should be the ones who are providing us with all of this information. It's worrying that when you go to the notes, you find that from phase 3 to phase 4, only 5% of women. It's an increase of 5%, despite the fact that majority of citizens in South Africa are women, and then you only find that it has moved what 5%. Unemployment rate has gone so up in especially when we went into the COVID and everything, and yet we still find the young people not having or being given the opportunity to be part of the EPWP. And I think that not enough is also done to roll in people with disability. It's of a great concern. I will go to the NPOs and NGOs because I believe that all of these departments, and I think, Chair, because EPWP is a program, is a baby of Public Works. And there are all of these departments that are also using EPWP to do some of the work. Maybe in future, these departments must be part of, or they must be invited to a meeting to come and explain to us, to say how does their EPWP work? Because we find that my worry is that most of the beneficiaries are being exploited, especially by NPOs and NGOs. Because if the Department of Roads
is going to implement, is going to take EPWP beneficiaries to do roads and everything. You'd find that the NPO or whoever is being given the tender to do that is exploiting. These people go home with nothing in hand. They basically work for bread on the table. There's nothing that they can point to say, I was in the EPWP program. This is what I have benefited from them. This is, I can show you, I've bought myself a stove or a bed, or I managed to build a proper shack. That's one of the issues that I have. I want to go to this program of work seeker program that the presenter was talking about, to say that they've got a program, they are in collaboration with the Department of Labor and Employment, whereby they've got this program. Are the people out there aware that there's such a program? How does the program work? Does it mean I have to put in my own details and then they are captured on their system? If there's employment available anywhere, especially the EPWP beneficiaries, which I don't know which skills are they getting, because most of them, they're sweeping streets and cleaning graveyards. If there's any employment that comes out, are these beneficiaries, if they are on the system, are they going to be contacted to say, here is a there's permanent employment at this place, please go there? Are they going to be absorbed, or does it mean they have to go through the whole process of selection and interviews and all of those things for them to be employed? If they can just elaborate on that program. I thought that we'll get a comparison. Past years, 2022, 2023, and then because the slides mostly speak about 2023, 2024 financial year as to what's going to happen. And if we could have gotten a clear idea as to what's happening 2022, 2023, then we can have a better idea as to how the money is actually spent. The other one is the breakdown or the allocation that they are talking about for the financial year of 2023-24 and the money that is given to all of these public bodies. What are the amounts that are given to each and every province? And what is the priority? I think I've once asked this question. I'm not sure if I ever received the response to that. As to what is the criteria to tell us that Eastern Cape gets 20 rands, KZN gets 10 rands, Gauteng gets 50 rands, Western Cape gets 100 rands. What are the criteria that they are using to say this province gets so much money? Because in the rural areas, the high employment rate is very high, one, due to the lack of education or the lack of funding to go and study further, or the lack of, because people are being held up by traditions to say a girl child can't go to school, they are going to get married, so there's no need for us to take them to school. Some of them don't go to school because the parents do not have money. Some do not go to school because the school is too far for them to be actually educated in the rural areas. So how is the allocation done in the provinces? What criteria is used for the allocation of these funds into provinces? And then I would go to the issue of the Department of Transport, and they talk about provincial roads, and nothing has been said by the local roads that fall under the municipalities. What is being done? Is it also part? Does it mean that provincial is going to give local, and then local sorts out the local roads, and what are the allocations also there? Because I thought that the report will be in detail that we can, but unfortunately for us, so some of these issues we could find them in the information that we got from the researchers and also from us when we go around and see what happens out there. And my greatest concern, again, Chair, is the exploitation of EPWP beneficiaries. They do most of the work, but the people that have been given to administer and make sure that this work is done, they walk away with a lot of money. They enrich themselves and exploit these people because of they are being told that at least we are giving you something. It's not like when you are sitting at home, and we need to move away from that. And I think the only best thing that needs to happen is that these beneficiaries, because we are forever going to need people who sweep the streets. We are forever going to need people who clean the graveyards. There's always going to be graveyards, new graveyards. So there's forever going to be employment. Why can't these people, the beneficiaries of EPWP, easily be absorbed into the system and insourcing happens so that they can get permanent employment with benefits? Because at this moment, they don't have any benefits. What you get is what you go home with, and it's the end of the story. And also the period of employment, to say 6 months. I think in the past, I've also raised that in 6 months, you can't even open an installment to say, I want to buy my kids a TV or something. So why can't they extend the period to at least 1 year, 1 year, 6 months, or 2 years for people to be able to benefit properly from the program and avoid this exploitation? And what criteria are they monitoring these NPOs? Are these NPOs held accountable if they do not deliver? What interventions are put in place by the Department of Public Works, knowing that DPWP is their baby? If NPOs do not deliver on what they are supposed to deliver on, what intervention is done against those NPOs and NGOs? Or if a public body does not deliver on the mandate, what intervention is done by the department itself? And that's only that for now. Chair, if there's anything that comes up, I'll come back for another bite. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Suwisa. Honorable Mashele.
Thank you very much, Chair. Greetings to yourself and fellow members, the Deputy Minister and your interim, including support staff of the Portfolio Committee. Morning. Chair, few questions which probably one might want clarity on. Firstly, I want to welcome the presentation. I hope probably now that we are trying to introduce the system, we are moving towards the right direction. And I understand that the system is a living institution. It will be corrected as we move. Chair, what is the plan of the department in probably skilling these participants such that at the exit end they can utilize the skill, they can utilize what they've gained here, whether both in public and in the private sector. Particularly in the private sector, if for instance we have got people cleaning here and we in this intervening period that cleaning a particular building, what is the future plan of making sure that those people are being absorbed there? That takes me to also saying, does the department have a plan to prevent participants from being exploited by institutions? More often than not, you'll ask yourself a question to say, if probably this EPWP people were not there, who was going to clean this cemetery, who was going to do all these odd jobs that they are doing? Because I think at the same time, we must not create a situation where our people are being exploited instead of them getting proper jobs in that particular place. So one has an interest in checking if We do have a plan to avoid exploitation of our people. The last comment share, probably the last question share would be, what will the department do? And this question was asked equally by Honorable Tring. What will you do in the event that institutions do not comply in line with your system? I'm raising this chair because a simple thing that could be done would be to say, if this particular department or municipality is not complying, we stop funding. And therefore, beneficiaries are going to suffer simply because Tim Marshall somewhere did not do his job. And the people are going to suffer, they are the needy ones. It's not the one who has failed to perform his function. Now, does the department have a plan to go around and implement itself in the event where an institution is failing? What plan do we have outside the stopping the funding? Because if you stop the funding, you're only punishing the institution. You're not punishing the institution, you're punishing the people on the ground. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Michelle, Honorable Franz Calvi.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to the Honorable Chairperson, our Deputy Minister, our members, as well as the staff members, including the departmental officials. Thank you very much, Chairperson, for this opportunity. And also, I'm welcoming the presentation that has been made, and we've engaged on the same issues over the past few years, and we are still finding ourselves with the same challenges in this regard. So I'm not going to mention the issues that has been raised previously, although I'm fully concurring with the challenges that has been raised or the concerns that has been raised by some of my colleagues that spoke before me. So Chairperson, to me, I'm still of the opinion that this is an excellent program, an excellent flagship program, as it has been recognized internationally. But I'm just afraid, Chairperson, that we might be losing out in terms of bettering the system and in terms of addressing the challenges that have been raised over the past few years. So I'm really encouraged by the collaborative efforts with the Department of Employment and Labor in terms of the ISA program, and I think it's an excellent initiative. My challenge would just be then, Chairperson, that when we look at the skills that those exiting, the participants, who are exiting the program, the skills that they are obtaining, it's not really skills that would advance them in terms of further employment opportunities. So as been raised in the previous years, on a continuous basis, I'm still of the view that this program should focus more on skills transfers, skills which will be needed in the job market in such a way that you look at the skills that is needed in especially in the private sector, seeing that we have this challenge of high unemployment and government is not in a position to employ all these unemployed people, but we need to get a private sector on board. But it won't help if we are developing these participants and we have a skills mismatch. The skills that they are acquiring is not actually needed in the job market in the private sector. So if we can improve on that issue, it will really benefit our people and assist us. But Chairperson, it has been raised in the past also that the program is struggling to attract and retain youth in this regard. Maybe it's because of the type of skills that are offering are being offered, like Honorable Suwisa said, they are glorified sweepers and working in cemeteries. So maybe if we can look at the type of skills like in the tourism industry and many industries that's now flaring up, which needs skills, if we can look at attracting our youth through assisting them with those kind of skills, it would also assist. We are seeing, Chairperson, we are in the era of within the high unemployment rate that our citizens are becoming so impatient, and it's rightfully so. And we would see that we have foreigners that we claim to take our people's jobs. But when we look at the kind of services they are rendering, Chairperson, maybe we can benchmark with that, because we know that they are busy in the ICT sector, whereby they are repairing phones and stuff like that. So maybe that's the kind of new ventures that we need to look into in terms of capacitating our youth to be on par, so that they'll be able to fill that market in terms of the skills that they are going to get from this EPW program. So I think I'll pause there for now, Chairperson. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you, Honorable Members, Honorable Pascalvic, and thank you all the Honorable Members for their questions that they have raised. Without asking any question, but let me appreciate the road traveled so far by EPWP, from what was there when we came in 2019 and to where you are now. Yes, there may be hiccups on the way, but it shows that at least there is a serious improvement, especially when you talk on the management of the whole issue. But we can't stop raising the issue of the skills transfer and ensuring that we have people that can, if possible, generate their own income. How are we saying that? I think what Honorable Graham Murray has said on the issue of maybe attracting plumbers or maybe training young people on plumbing, and sometimes even to be electricians, things that even when they are no longer in the employ of the EPWP, those will be things that they can use in their communities so that they can have income some way or another. Over to you, CJ and DM, in responding to the questions and comments raised by Honorable Members.
Thank you, Chair. And let me appreciate the comments and the questions from the Honorable Members. In actual fact, Chair, one could summarize them as just a few concerns which are more focused on saying skills development, and skills development. And I think that I was hoping, CJ, you would be able to just if you have the video of our graduation, share with the honorable members so that they see what there's kind of evidence of what we are doing in the area of skills. But I will allow you to kind of take the honorable members through first the responses, and I will come back later with your team, of course. If you could, whether it's photographs or from the various training institutions that we work with, but also please share the kind of detail where we as a department are involved. I note that Honorable Suisa, the point of inviting other role players in the EPWP space, I hope the committee will take that up, because we do also get invited by other portfolio committees on matters that affect their departmental portfolios. So for me, I would encourage that, because we will then be able to also get a deeper understanding of what programs are on the ground. But let me first, Chair, to you allow the team to respond to the issues, and I will come back when they finish. CJ and the chief directors present. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Minister, and thank you, members, for the questions. Let me switch on my camera. I just want to know if it's possible that I could share, get some sharing rights. Because, Deputy Minister, I think you have a very valuable point, which is let's display some of the work being done. And I'm going directly to our EPWP Facebook. So it might not show exactly very well in relation to on the screen, but I'm going to try and then go through. So yesterday was an amazing, exciting day for us, because yesterday in a very remote area, which is called Pella, in the Northern Cape, we then had companies that are in the energy sector going ahead and assisting and transferring equipment, which is sewing equipment to a cooperative in the Northern Cape, which is about 254 kilometers outside. And there are some of those initiatives. We've had very exciting opportunities being undertaken in the Northern Cape in terms of skills development. I was particularly touched by the fact that our initiatives involve not only the private sector, but we are able to get other government organizations. So if we have a look there in the photo, and I'm not sure how it's displaying on the screen, but the Facebook can be accessed. And Mayor Reka Katuso in the Northern Cape, which is the fund in relation to the Premier's office, also goes ahead and support. Economic development also supports. So as the EPWP, we've been able to do cooperative development, recognizing that our role is to bring and to coordinate as public works. So there's a number of exciting initiatives that are going forth. And then DM, I want to just jump forth to some of the initiatives that we've had the privilege of taking you to. And specifically then going ahead and looking at some of, as DPW, we post virtually every day which then tells us about some of the exciting things that we are doing daily. But I want to go in and focus on our autism development program. You can see over here, this is in the Nelspruit regional office, then took us to some of the autism development initiatives. And here, these are 40 EPWP artisans, people that were previously on the National Youth Service that is now being trained in terms of doing various related trades. Now, the types of trades that you can look at is quite extensive. And I just want to go through the trades that we are doing. We're doing boiler making, diesel mechanic, electric, fitter and turner, chefs, hairdressing, carpentry, etc. And over the last period, what we have done is we have recognized it's important that we start to highlight the work that is being done. And so there's been this year extensive visits being undertaken where we then showcase and we then go ahead and we then provide the opportunity for people to be able to see the type of work being done. So that was Toyota. And I think I've jumped too fast. Let me just see here quickly. We also took Deputy Minister to a recent one project that I was quite excited about, yes, in the Sedibeng area. And let me just scroll slightly down. That is an employer as a mentor giving us their viewpoint in relation to the trainees that are diesel mechanic trainees at Toyota Middelburg. Speaking of how excited he is, there is the participant speaking about their experience in EPWP. So very often we post on our website in relation to the experience of this one. There's a particular video that I'm extremely excited about where some of the learners then would do fitting and turning. And I don't think it will work, and I don't think we're going to test the system on how to showcase, this learner specifically showcased what they have learned. Now, collectively, our project is for artisan training has been a target of just over 300 artisans. For us, it's important that we recognize that the participant may come in through a initiative that is a year initiative. But for us, it is important to create that linkage and then ask the question, how do we improve the livelihoods of participants? So big questions we are then asking is, if the participant comes in for that particular year, which are the skills that our country needs that we need to be able to focus on? These types of initiatives are fairly expensive, and these are rates that are determined through the Department of Higher Education and Training. And so we know that it is an investment, and we will be tracking the participants and what happens to them afterwards. So as the department, we are very active in terms of skills development, and there are some exciting work that we will be doing that I will share further as we proceed in terms of the policy. So our Facebook is very explicit in some of the work we are doing, and we can then go ahead and follow some of the interventions that we as a department are undertaking. Now, I'd like to just then focus on the questions that were then asked of me. Honorable Heatlin, the EPWP is currently going through the process of our EPWP policy. And in that policy, we are saying to ourselves, we need to bring in important principles. The first principle is that we need to follow what we call a programmatic approach. And that programmatic approach is supposed to ask ourselves, what exactly are we wanting to achieve from a socioeconomic perspective? Moving beyond the numbers, asking exactly what good and service is now being delivered through this EPWP program. We recognize that not all programs will have the ability to create pathways, sustainable pathways. But we are then saying those programs that specifically have a closer alignment to the ability to do training and link it to the market, it should be explicitly stated. We recognize that the EPWP is largely an unfunded mandate, particularly because in the slides that I showcased was to show that it is the leveraging of existing funds to in order to create the work opportunities. And that will also then explain a little bit of what Honorable Gray Marie was asking in relation to the 30%. Mr. Ariel, can I ask that you please cover that, because that will explain the funding and how the targeting then works for us when we get to that. But for us, Honorable Heitlin, to come back, we are clear that the EPWP has a number of good programs. We need to write these programs up, and those programs that can be scaled up need to be scaled up. We need to create an institutional arrangement that allows us to be able to engage the Treasury active, because our role as the coordinators is supposed to shine a light on those practices that are excellent and that are in need of being scaled up. Correctly stated that our role is to be able to assist with sustainable livelihoods. This year has also been a very exciting year for us because we've introduced, last year, the 8 dimensions of quality, which means that programs in the EPWP will vary. But how do we go about measuring its cost effectiveness, its ability to reach, Honorable Siyiswa, in terms of reaching the targets of designated groups, which are the programs, and evaluating them in terms of what we call 8 dimensions of quality. We then engage with the Treasury to say that particular program, for example, National Youth Service, is efficient from a cost perspective, is efficient from an full-time equivalent perspective, which is durations, and therefore we are thinking we would like to be able to say those are the programs that we would want to scale up. So particularly in terms of our EPWP policy, we are clearly stating that we need to bring out our programs clearly. We need to articulate that the EPWP is not just one big program. It varies. It will have home-based community care. It will have early childhood development. It will have working on fire. And these programs vary in the types of interventions you undertake. But all of them must have something in common, which is they must provide income, they must provide a work opportunity, they should be labor intensive in its approach, and they should be delivering valuable services within communities. And then we go forth, and we then point out those that would require even more of an investment in the EPWP in terms of training. Now, why do I say it's been an exciting process? Because this program started many, many years back. But it is good to take your EPWP policy through the various processes to have it endorsed. Because that then gets a number of government departments to say, it is good. I see where you are going with this particular policy. And I can see where we can come in to even provide further funding. And that specifically was the comment from DHET. We are working with DHET. We receive more than 200 million from them through our application of funds, which we then utilize for the artisan initiatives that I have mentioned and shown through our EPWP Facebook. And so we continue to work with them through the TIVETs and the community education training centers. The reason why I didn't cover these other items in our presentation was because I focused specifically on the keywords that was put out in the in the request. But we can therefore clearly indicate that the policy, which is now at the cabinet stage today, it is serving at cabinet, I'm told. I trust it is, seeing that I'm not at the cabinet because of who attends. But to recognize that it is now at a level whereby we have to ask for public comment, and therefore it will be gazetted very shortly. The journey of the policy was also exciting because it allowed us to engage the constituencies, the private sector, the community, and labor. And in February month and March month, we took the constituencies to various provinces, the Western Cape, the Northwest Province, and Limpopo Province. And we showed them the variety of the EPWP programs. And it was quite exciting in the sense of, I don't know which honorable member then asked on the private sector involvement. Honorable Van Schalkwyk was mentioning it. It was then to be able to then get commitments from NEDLAC constituencies on how business can engage us better, specifically for business to advise on what are the skills required by the private sector, to ask how they can assist us, because this program was never intended to only be a program implemented by government. It was supposed to be with all constituencies that made GDS commitments in relation to that process. So a task team has been set up where all constituencies now are answering the question during this policy development year that we are in, to even say, how do we strengthen this EPWP more, and ask what exactly the private sector must do, how we can deal with exploitation, and how the community can help us to strengthen the social facilitation aspects of the EPWP. So that task team has been adopted, and it is work being done through the development chamber of NEDLAC. And so we're very excited because we've been proactive in relation to the policy development process, recognizing that you only go to NEDLAC after you have gone through the gazetting process. And so for us, it was important to have a policy that is therefore reflective of these objectives that we were wanting, as mentioned, income support, work opportunities, skills transfer, SMME development, etc. The policy also speaks to all of those aspects. If I can then move on more speedily, in relation to, and Mr. Arya will answer some of those questions in relation to what Honorable Marais has asked, if I have not covered it. In terms of the EPWP reporting process, for us to recognizing that the incentive grant is only 8% of all EPWP funding, we are very explicit. We put out an incentive. The first thing we start out with is the DORA conditions. So the conditional grant framework puts out very clearly what needs to happen from a reporting perspective. Before any drawdowns can happen, a project has to be reported on our EPWP reporting system, and therefore they then would be getting what you then call a project ID profile, and that then gets monitored for the entire year. Mr. Arya then has monthly meetings. Mr. Arya then has monthly meetings that then goes ahead and monitors those particular projects that are put forth in relation to the incentive grant funding. In terms of the threshold for admin, it is 5% of the grant can be used to fund contract-based capacity requirements. In relation to the community work program, the community work program has been amending its program, particularly from a policy perspective. They are of the opinion that it is more work opportunity related and not necessarily as much as the skilling focus. It is therefore important that we continue to engage them. I think the important question that always comes up with training is the issue of training. Do you expand on the training and instead of creating more opportunities and work opportunities? We know that our country has 11 million SRD participants, and the Treasury has come to us to say, can we assist to be able to transfer and have some people undertake some meaningful work in relation to receiving that particular grant? So what we therefore recognize is that there's always this tug of war between, do you upscale the number of work opportunities or do you invest in training? And there's no simple answer for that, but to say that if the EPWP is going to then link with the employability of the participant, training is relevant. It's very vital. And so therefore, it is important that we recognize that training in itself can be capacity building and also add to the participants' livelihood. And therefore we looked at some of the models, and I don't have too much time to be able to go into those models, whereby we've partnered with organizations such as the Labour, International Labour Organization, and we took it one step further this year, where we've asked them that some of our DPWI officials are able to accredit even more trainers. And these trainers are government officials, because what we are saying is when a government official visits a project, you can't just go and visit a project just for visiting a project and looking at the accountability of the project. You need to go and impart skills. And that is the model that we've applied with our Start and Improve Your Own Business. And those are some of the examples that I showed you in terms of the Pella example of small business development. So we've upscaled the model, and it's a bit difficult to go into the detail now in terms of it. But what we are recognizing is that capacitation is also vital to be able to move our participants into SMME development aspects. And it's not about sometimes going through a learnership. Sometimes it's about going through the process of assisting participants to develop the business plan, to be able to engage stakeholders, to have certain aspects funded of the business plan, et cetera, et cetera. And that is the work we specifically do as the DPWI in an effort to help with the bakeries we've established in EPWP, the agricultural organizations that we've established. And some of these participants are actually supplying government. So there's definitely a good story to tell in relation to it. So yes, DWP is busy transforming at the moment. They've even gone through organizational change over the last period. The verification process, I think I can go through it, but I would want Mayor Tembakazi Maluleke rather to go through it. She's the director in terms of data quality and reporting. If we then move further, for us, we are busy today, actually, we're putting out a framework on persons with disabilities. We want to enhance our participation of persons with disabilities. However, we recognize that we need to assist public bodies to understand how to do so. We recognize that when you do try to upscale the number of persons with disabilities, you need to look at reasonable accommodation matters. You need to look at the suitability also, and also how you engage organizations that are within that particular sector. So we are busy putting forth, we've developed the draft framework, and now we're consulting with the public bodies to make sure that they see it to be fit for adoption and fit for use. In terms of the exploitation of EPWP, I think measures that we are doing there is for us, it's important for us to provide technical support to public bodies to clearly guide them on how to design EPWP. We also undertake public body visits to be able to deal with those particular matters. And the reality of it is we encourage public bodies to access the law. If somebody breaks the law, you need to make sure that as per the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, there are measures to be able to highlight that to the Department of Labor, and therefore utilizing our labor inspectors that is not only for EPWP, but for the broader economy. In terms of the work seeker component, the ESA component, Mayor Tembakazi Mluleke will take us through that particular one. And then in terms of the allocations, particularly in terms of the Division of Revenue Act, Mr. Ario will explain that, but that would follow the normal process in relation to the appropriations bill, and you would then go ahead follow the same treasury processes in relation to that, noting that EPWP funding is about leveraging in relation to the program. Let me just see if there's anything else. In terms of the roads, Mr. Ario can also advise us in terms of the roads, mentioning specifically that the MIG funding is where we leverage and we introduce labor-intensive measures. Now, to come to Honorable Tring, Mayor Tembakazi Maluleke will go through the criteria for reporting. Will the municipality have the capacity to comply? As mentioned, we provide technical support to municipalities. Mr. Ario can advise us on the extent of that. We also provide a EPWP learning program. So if I had to go back and I had to share then some of the interventions, we had about 200 people being trained last week. This is something that my our branch as the EPWP goes ahead and actually implement so that we can, and there you would find some of the EPWP participants being trained on what the EPWP is about. You can see many of them are young people. I see them as the future EPWP leaders, and if we go forth, we will even see some of the testimonials that we then have in relation to the EPWP learning program. So that was one of the ladies that then spoke about the EPWP learning program and the interventions and the gentleman speaking about this. This happened last week for a week. So if we just then look at the 25th of August, that's when some of the videos were uploaded. Maluleka, I think that is some interesting proposal from Honorable Tring, particularly recognizing that we are migrating the public bodies from our current version, which is version 1, to this version 2. And we have in the past not decommissioned that particular platform, and it has come to be of benefit, particularly when you've had system challenges. So I think we may have to say that you don't want to fully decommission that phase one, because I think it could be assisting us even in the future. So I think that is something that I would have been faced with in terms of once we have fully migrated everybody, that Mayor Maluleka may have asked that question, what do we do with the system? Depending on if she says it's still viable to maintain it and to keep it, depending on the cost, because we're all subject to the PFMA, I think it is a good suggestion to try and retain it. Then, if we then go further, Honorable Michelle, I think we have responded to you in relation to the skilling component and the exploitation, and then in terms of the compliance with the system. The incentive grant process is a very intensive process. So it's a regular engagement with public bodies. It starts out with the public body. First of all, we have workshops with public bodies to explain to them what is the requirement in terms of the incentive grant. We therefore go ahead and we also then say to them they must provide us with a project list related to it. We provide technical support in compiling that particular list. Every month in terms of the Division of Revenue Act, there needs to be a reporting, which we then put through the National Treasury. And then if there is a challenge, we monitor on our system who reports regularly. And if there is, we see there's no movement on the reporting, we then intervene through our EPWP officials to ensure the reporting. So there's a very intensive process, which is the engagement with the public body and the engagement with the Treasury. We tend to have a very high performance from a grant perspective in relation to our grants. Honorable Van Schalkwyk, I think we have recognized the importance here of the skills, and for me, I'm very excited about the work that we are doing on the skilling front, particularly the skills that really aim to be able to take people totally out of EPWP and into the labor market, and hopefully then never come back to an EPWP and therefore have the multiplier effect not only in the community, but also then go ahead and assist from a household perspective in relation to it. I think, Chair, we have looked at the skills transfer question that you've asked, and if I can just ask then Mr. Ario to come in, and then may Timbakazi Maluleka to also come in to be able to explain. And I think the last question was, Honorable Marie, the question that we were wanting to have is we want oversight from with other public bodies. And we would like those questions to be also then asked to the relevant accounting authorities so that collectively we recognize that this program is more than DPWI, but it does involve other stakeholders too. And all of us need to account to the laws of our country. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Abraham. My name is Ignatius Ayo. I'm from the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. I'll just help with some of the questions. Honorable Deputy Minister, Honorable Chairperson of the Committee, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee of Public Works and Infrastructure, officials supporting the Portfolio Committee, and colleagues from the Department of Public Works, good morning. Just to answer some of the questions that were put through, Honorable Marie, Graham Marie asked a question about the thresholds. I think that has been answered in terms of the incentive grant, that 5% is the cap in terms of the admin costs, and that includes non-permanent staff and maybe and even equipment if you need equipment like computers for capturing of data. In terms of the question about the 30% on the mid-budget, the estimate and the 25%, that is just the 25 or 30% of MIG refers to the overall budget of the MIG grant that we estimate would be used for EPWP projects overall. But you would find that in a particular public body, the projects they may be implementing in a particular financial year may be suitable, may all be suitable for EPWP. So in that case, most of the projects then would be regarded as EPWP. So 30% is just a minimum threshold that we work towards in terms of the overall MIG budget. Specifically, in terms of the question, how much of that goes to labor? We have labor intensive guidelines, and we try to aim that between 20 to 30% of project costs should go to labor. That's what we target in terms of labor intensity. But this depends on the nature of the projects being implemented. On some maintenance projects, you may find even up to 70% of the project costs going to labor. So the minimum threshold we try to work towards above 20%, that of the project costs should go towards labor if we're doing it labor intensively, but it depends on the type of project that is being done, because you still have to have material costs, costs of equipment, and things like that. In terms of the question asked us about public bodies that don't comply, Ms. Abrahams answered that we do training. We have workshops with the public bodies in cases where they are not compliant. We have a one-on-one meeting with the public body to ensure that they comply. Maybe there may be a report that they are not submitting in terms of the grant, so that to ensure that they comply. We try to avoid stopping of the allocations. That is the last resort. That will come in very rare circumstances. We've had to stop allocations, but for the past financial year, it only happened to one public body, two public bodies actually. And then we had to, in that case, we had to reallocate the funding to other municipalities that would be performing well and that have also indicated that they would need additional funding. But that is the very last resort. What we do is the training in terms of the compliance requirements, and also we provide technical support to ensure that the public bodies, so as us also, how do we ensure that the public bodies use the system for the incentive grant projects? Or for the incentive grant projects, we do have a project list that public bodies are supposed to submit with their incentive grant agreements. One of the requirements on that project list is that they're supposed to provide for us a profile ID number of a project. So every project has a unique profile ID number, and it is a condition of that project list that you have to register your project on the monitoring system, and then that will a profile ID number that you will then include on the project list. It then becomes easy for the department to monitor whether a particular project is being reported, because we would have the unique profile ID number. So that's what we do in order to make sure that public bodies use the system. And you need to submit, it's a condition of the grant, that you submit a incentive agreement with a properly filled project list before we transfer any funding to a particular public body. Then another question was asked by Honorable Sister in terms of the what are the conditions for the grant. In terms of the particular conditions for the grant to be eligible, you need to have reported in a prior financial year, reported on EPWP. Also on the project that you have reported, you need to have created 13 full-time equivalents per million rand of expenditure. And the reason why we have that threshold of 13 full-time equivalents, and a full-time equivalent is the same as one full-time equivalent is the same as 230 person years of employment, is because we're encouraging public bodies to be very efficient when they use their funding to create work opportunities, to create long-term opportunities, but also have the right labor intensity. And the reason why we look at the full-time equivalent is because one of the functions of the full-time equivalent, it looks at the duration of the work opportunity. So that if you have longer durations, you then have more full-time equivalents. And what that means that participants will be employed on a project for a longer duration, which will then ensure that there is a longer period for transfer of to them, which makes a difference in terms of their livelihoods. So that also answers the question as to public bodies to have longer duration in terms of their projects. Also, in terms of the formula for the grant, the formula is biased towards whether a municipality or a public body is in a rural area, where there is also a bias towards backlogs in a particular area. There's also a bias towards areas of unemployment. So you would see, like in the allocations of the provincial integrated grants, you see that the provinces that get most of the funding are the rural provinces, to be KwaZulu-Natal. Those are provinces with a lot of rural populations that get most of the funding. And for municipalities as well, you see that there's a bias that the rural municipalities as an aggregate get most of the funding. And that is because we want to promote job creation in those areas. Then in terms of the provincial road maintenance grant departments, and that is something that we monitor together with Department of Transport, because this funding goes to Department of Transport. Department of Transport then transfers funding to this provincial road department. So together with Department of Transport, we monitor the implementation of the funding. We also ensure that the projects that are funded through the grant, that the public bodies or provincial roads departments optimize on the EPWP projects they're implementing and report on the projects as well. For municipalities, we rely on it is through the MIG funding. MIG covers a variety of infrastructure. Roads is included in the MIG funding. So out of the MIG funding, some of it goes to roads, some of it goes to water reticulation. So the funding would go through the MIG funding for municipalities in terms of EPWP. Those are some of the additional responses I could give in terms of the different areas. Thank you very much.
Any other person, CJ, who is going to respond?
Yes, Chair, it will be Temba Kazi Maluleka.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Maluleka, please.
Thank you, DDG. Good morning to the Honorable Minister, the Department of Public Works, the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, the members of the Portfolio Committee, and all protocols observed. Chairperson, I'm going to respond to questions related to the EPWP reporting system, data management, and our linkage to the ESSA system of the Department of Employment and Labor. Please allow me to start with the ESSA system. As a department, we acknowledge that the system is an online recruitment system, which is owned by the Department of Employment and Labor, and the system is available to all South African citizens. It's a work seeker's database which acts as an intermediation between the job seeker as well as the employers, which means that the system allows for the registration of job seekers, and it also allows for the registration of employers. As a department, we understand that the system has been in existence for quite some time. We also know or have knowledge that the Department of Employment and Labor has set up some access centers in all the nine departments, in all the nine provinces, rather, to assist or support job seekers who do not have access to technology. We therefore, as a department, took the advantage to have an initiative of linking the EPWP reporting system with the ESSA system for purposes of augmenting the current exit strategies that the department is implementing with regards to EPWP participants. The linkage will be automated, which means that the EPWP participants do not have to physically register themselves on the system or take the initiative to get their details registered on the system. It will be an automated process. We will do that through the profiles which have been created in the EPWP reporting system. We understand that when it comes to reporting, we report detailed information on the program in terms of the projects which are implemented as well as the participants who are working in those projects. We therefore have the information of the participants who are in EPWP projects. The profiles include the contact details of these participants. We therefore will interface with the ESSA system and transfer that information from the EPWP reporting system into the ESSA system to create those profiles. We understand that there are some requirements with the Department of Labor in order to create a CV on the system. We are, as the department, in the process of communicating with the public bodies to source all that information so that we can allow our participants to have more opportunities accessible to them when they exit the EPWP program. That is the initiative that we are currently undertaking, Chairperson, and we understand that it will be of great benefit, especially to the EPWP participants. There was a question which was raised about this interface with the ESSA system. Some of the questions were relating to whether the public bodies or the participants have been made aware of this initiative. And I've explained how it's going to work. It will be an automated process. The participants will not have to register themselves on the system, but the department will take that initiative of creating their profile for the ESSA system so that when an opportunity arises from the Department of Labor's matching system, then those participants will be informed through the contacts that they have provided to the EPWP. We have informed the departments. We are still in that process because this is an initiative that we currently have undertaken in the current financial year. We're still in the process of finalizing and also ensuring that all the participants who are in the program are made aware of that initiative. And then in terms of the reporting system initiative, which has been presented by the DDG of the EPWP. Yes, we are in the process of migrating participants from an older version of the system to a more advanced system, which includes the features which have been presented in the presentation, some of which are the biometrics tool. We believe that it will be of great benefit to the program in terms of improving the quality of data that we are collecting from the sites where the programs are where the projects are implemented. We believe that it will also be of assistance in terms of accuracy of the information that we are reporting to and and also realize the validity of the information. We are currently linked with the National Population Register of the Department of Home Affairs, which means that the ID numbers or the participants rather that we are reporting are indeed valid participants. The ID numbers are valid, and we're also able to eliminate participants who have disease from the project, from the program. However, we want to ensure that the work opportunities that are reported are indeed valid, and therefore the initiative to take were implemented the biometrics tool on the EPWP reporting system. We are currently running a parallel system. I think there was a question that was related to that. Yes, we have two systems, and in the process of migrating, we want to ensure that before we migrate all the public bodies into the new system, there is some form of stability. We do not fall on the cracks, and therefore we are taking a phased-in approach, which means that we are running two systems at the same time. Moving one sphere of government at a time. We've currently finalized the national and the provincial spheres. We are having the municipalities outstanding, which means that the municipalities are still reporting in the old system. We are intending to retain that system as a backup. And we take the advice as well from the members. It is an initiative that we have planned because these are systems which are owned by the department. I want to believe that I have answered all the questions. Chair, if there are any follow-ups, I am more than willing to respond to those questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I take it that, CJ, your team has now exhausted their responses. Mine is to just round out by emphasizing two issues that I've felt not addressed in totality in the questions. The one is that of communicating. Do people really know what you do? Yes, we have improved our own internal processes and systems of communication through our change program. There has been lull in the past, but I can assure you now, honorable members, that just by visiting our own websites and our program sites, you will be able to see the extent to which communication does take place. And therefore, there is communication through social media, but also there are media briefings from time to time as we go around as ambassadors of the work that is being done by the department. We do hold from time to time media briefings so that people are informed, but also we physically go to communities with a view to share with communities our programs. Each time we go to site visits, our monitoring and evaluation role, when we play it, we really treat ourselves as ambassadors of the work of departments. But also, there's greater collaboration now with all departments through the push that public works, you can't do it alone, especially that it is not only your own program, but you are coordinating it on behalf of others. So you need to collaborate more with them. Just yesterday, I happened to look at Facebook of Buffalo City, and there was the Department of Employment and Labor also advocating for the same program as part of the collaboration work that we are doing with the departments, and therefore there is greater communication now with people, and I would say just being on this platform, when I started speaking, I said I'm happy that the honorable members have posed this question for us to come and respond to not only the committee, but to the people of South Africa, because these programs are also broadcast live. And therefore, just by mere responding to your questions, the information is shared with the public. So we do try and through collaboration communicate, but also through our own programs we do communicate. I thought we needed to say this because indeed this program is not only about numbers, but that's what I had said when I initially spoke, that it is a program about ensuring that we build, we contribute to building cohesive communities. Because when communities, when there's much unemployment, people become disillusioned. But with opportunities that are being brought about by this program, it's the nature of the program, how it is driven, forces communities to work together, forces counselors who also are our advocates now in terms of them working with their communities when implementing programs of EPWP. So them also being our communicators. But we all contribute to building this united and democratic, prosperous South Africa. I know that these are not full-time jobs, Honorable Suisa, and I know that you are passionate about seeing a situation where these become permanent jobs. But public employment jobs in their nature create a stepping stones. In fact, what Honorable Higgling was saying we're not doing, we are actually doing exactly that. We are creating those stepping stones for the members of the people, especially the vulnerable, to be able to step on those stones to build the future, but also to be able which is to ensure that their livelihoods are taken care of. And I thought I needed to just round up by those words, Honorable Chairperson, but once more, thanks for the opportunity. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DM, and thank you, Ms. CJ, and your team, and also responding in detail on the questions and comments that have been raised by honorable members. I saw, but now it's no longer there, I saw Honorable Tring's hand. I don't know whether it was a follow-up question or a legacy hand.
Legacy hand, Chair, thank you.
thank you, Honorable Tring. We really appreciate DM. That when we pose questions, because as you have indicated so clearly, so we want South African people to know what is happening. I think we all know that EPWP is one of the programs that we can find in each and every corner of South Africa. So as us who are playing oversight role on you as members of the parliament from different political parties, we owe people of South Africa this information that you have presented to them today. We really appreciate that. I think now we will, our item on the agenda, though the agenda was not written, I don't know whether you do have the minutes of the previous meeting.
Chairperson, can I ask Sita Biso to flight them because I do not have them.
Okay. Stabby?
Hello, Chair. Yes, Chair. Yes, we do not have the agenda for this meeting and the minutes as well. So Nola did not send it through, so we do not have it for this meeting.
Okay. No problems. I thought that because we still have time, we can deal with that. But it's no transmatch. We will deal with them in the next meeting. Honourable members, again, let me appreciate your robust debate and contribution in this meeting and the responses that we got from the department when we probed them with these questions. We really appreciate that. If we don't have any other matter then on the agenda, I declare the meeting adjourned. Thank you. See you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.